Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. If you live in the Piedmont Triad, you've probably heard of historic Kerner's Folly. But have you been? Well, as you're about to find out, you're going to want to pencil this one in. The 1880 Kernersville home itself is an architectural wonder, all 20-plus rooms of it, with all that carved wood, original furnishings, and artwork, and home tours are available all summer long, Thursday through Sunday. But the story of the quirky gentleman behind Kerner's Folly is equally engaging. Turns out Jule Kerner could have been a character in Mad Men with his own 19th century brand of guerrilla marketing. He was an activist whose family roots in the Piedmont couldn't have run much deeper, and he and his family were big believers in giving back to the community. You can experience it all, up close and personal, at next weekend's Homegrown Arts and Crafts Festival on the Kerner's Folly lawn. Kerner's Folly Executive Director Dale Pennington recently dropped by to chat with me about all things Kerner.
Kerner's Folly is the 1880s home of Jule Kerner and his family. Kerner was an interior designer, so he built Kerner's Folly as a catalog house, which means he just filled it with all of his designs. So there's 15 different fireplaces, there's 7 different levels, there's original tiles, furnishings, hand-painted murals throughout. And so touring Kerner's Folly is literally walking through his interior design catalog.
So it was really initially like a chance for him to show off his interior design work.
Absolutely. It was very much a furniture showroom and design showroom.
22 rooms? How many rooms?
Mm-hmm. 22 rooms, three stories tall, but those three stories are divided across 7 levels because he kind of took his creative talents to the realm of mad genius. And anytime he had a new idea for the company, he redesigned the house and wanted to find somewhere else to put it. So when he ran out of space, he started dividing rooms in half. So he'd take what was a really tall room, putting a floor in between to make what was one really tall room into 2 rooms.
Okay. Well, Jule, quite a colorful character himself.
Absolutely. The house is really a living testament to his personality. Huh. And it usually gets the rap as the strangest house in the world, but which I'll give it that. It is awfully strange in places. But the thing about Jule is that he really had a lot of purpose for most of his designs. I mean, upon further analysis, you can really figure out why he started to make some of these what look like strange decisions. A good example of that, there are a series of trapdoors throughout the first level of the house, which obviously seems kind of odd when you first walk in. But actually, the trapdoors lift up and they allow cool air to circulate from underneath the house. And so it's really like a series of air conditioning vents.
How about that?
They get cool air from the crawl space.
Way before AC came about. And before he got into the design world, though, another connection with this state, which makes a lot of sense, tobacco.
Jule Kerner worked for Bull Durham Tobacco very prominently. The Durham Bulls are still named for Bull Durham Tobacco today. And he worked for Bull Durham Tobacco doing advertising. So he wasn't growing tobacco. He wasn't manufacturing tobacco. He was doing advertising, which was also a very progressive career in the late 1800s. So he worked for Bull Durham in the 1880s and 1890s. And he traveled all over the United States and all over the world, drumming up controversy and drumming up national attention, international attention for Bull Durham Tobacco. He made these really incredible claims that he painted Durham Bulls on the Egyptian pyramids and the Rock of Gibraltar. Anything he could do to really generate a lot of excitement. One of my favorite stories about the Durham Bull advertising campaign is he would go into a town, he would paint a large bull anatomically correct on the side of a barn. He would write to the local newspaper pretending to be a young woman who was offended by this anatomically correct bull. Then he would go back, paint a fence in front of the bull, hiding any inappropriate parts, and write Bull Durham across the fence. And then he would write back to the newspaper pretending to be the same young woman and thanking Bull Durham for fixing their obscene advertising campaign. So if you read that in the news, what would you do?
Go out and smoke, I guess.
You'd want to go see what everybody in town is talking about.
Wow, that's amazing. And a staunch Republican supporter of Abe Lincoln in North Carolina, which is unusual for the
time.
Absolutely.
Very forward-thinking for his time. He actually decorated his house every year. He would hang giant banners on Abe Lincoln's birthday and write, you know, Abe Lincoln born this day. And then on Lincoln's assassination day in April, he would drape black fabric across the house, mourning that loss.
Wow. So you get the sense that this is a real individual character who didn't really care that much what other people thought.
Yeah. He had his own thoughts and beliefs. Another good example of that is they had a family nanny and maid. Her name was Aunt Dealey. She was a emancipated slave with the Kerner family, continued to live with the Kerners once Jewel built Kerner's Folly. When Aunt Dealey died, he wanted her to be buried in the Moravian Cemetery, where his entire family was buried, because that's how he thought of her. At that time, the Moravian Cemetery was a white-only cemetery, so they said, no, sorry, she can't be buried here. Jewel, wanting his way, and very much believing that she needed to be buried with his family, purchased the land that backed up to the Moravian Cemetery, buried Aunt Dealey there, and then built a brick wall around all of their plots. So it looks like a unified family grave plot. And then had her funeral service officiated by both a black and white minister.
Fascinating stuff.
So we recently came across a cookbook that Aunt Dealey owned. And through that, we found several different recipes that she would have cooked and used in the house. We typed some of those up and have those on display for visitors. We were then given a collection of kitchen wares and artifacts from the family, some of which are original to the house. And so we did a lot of reading on what a 1880s, 1890s kitchen would look like. We have a main kitchen and a summer kitchen. And so figuring out the difference between those two, and then figuring out what all of these different kitchen gadgets were that we don't use today. For example, we have a coffee roaster. It's a giant iron sphere that you would sit in a holder on top of the stove and rotate it to roast your coffee beans.
How about that? You mentioned you got the silverware from the Kerners family. Are there still Kerners walking around these parts?
In Kernersville, we've got Kerners with an E and Kerners with an O. So there's still both around. They're all descendants. They're all related. Jewel had 9 brothers and sisters. So lots of Kerner descendants still in the area. But Jewel Kerner's great-grandson actually lives right next door to Kerners Folly. So,
oh, what a great tradition. I mean, yeah. Talk about keeping it local. I thought this was interesting, too, that in the late 1890s, he and his family decided to open up the Folly to kids for free. What began that? That seems pretty forward-looking in my book.
Absolutely. So his wife, Polly Alice Maston, was from Winston-Salem. When they got married, she felt very fortunate to live in Kerner's Folly. They were a very wealthy family, naturally. They had unparalleled access to educational resources, cultural experiences. They were well-traveled. And she really wanted to give back to the community. So she told Jewel to renovate his billiards room, his man cave, which he did. And he built her a stage up there in 1897. She wanted to have a children's little theater up on the top floor of the house. She invited children from the community, ages 8 to 13, and invited them to come to Kerner's Folly, and they would learn plays. They would write their own plays. They would act out current events, which is also very forward-thinking. They would also design their own costumes, paint sets and backdrops, and it was just this wonderful time of cultural experience right there on the top level of Kerner's Folly.
For free?
Yeah. They had music lessons that they could do for free. I mean, it was really about giving back. She even had books down in the library on the first floor that she would rent out to the children, let them check it out. So we were one of Kernersville's first libraries in that respect as well.
And another first, right, in terms of the theater itself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the theater is rumored to be the first private little theater in America. And we still use it today for events. There's annual productions that go on up there. And the first time I got to experience one up there, I really was kind of overwhelmed by just the sense that I was seeing something in the way that the Kerners would have used the house and seeing it still being used in that way. It was very powerful.
Well, opening up the grounds to the public is something that, you're keeping that great tradition alive today as well coming up here.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a homegrown arts festival coming up July 19th, directly to the north of Kerner's Folly, so just adjacent to our parking lot. We have a large open lawn. There will be vendors set up throughout the lawn in tents, So tents in case there's rain. We've got local artisans and craftsmen that will all be on site. They'll be selling their wares, things like that. It's very casual, very informal. Drop in, do a little bit of shopping, see if there's any local artisans that catch your eye. And then, like I said, we're open for tours that day. So it's a great opportunity. I can describe the house all day long, but you really have to come see it firsthand to really understand the impact of it.
And you've been here for 3 years. Now, looking ahead, say the next 2 to 5 years, what do you see in the horizon for Kerner's Folly?
So the roof is getting replaced this summer, which is going to be a new historically appropriate look of the house. But the reason the roof work is so exciting is because it really sets the stage for us to be able to do interior restoration. And our plan for interior restoration is to just restore one room at a time, which means that the house will continue to be open for tours during that entire process. And with just one room being worked on at a time, it's a really great opportunity for visitors to come in and see historic preservation in action. It's a really great way to, you know, take a peek in that room and understand what's going on, whether it's replacing the paint color, redoing the murals on the ceilings, having custom plaster work redone. It's a really great way for visitors to see historic preservation firsthand.
Lots of things to consider. You don't just go in there and throw up some plaster.
Right. We've been doing our homework for sure. We've had color analysis, paint studies done. It's kind of like peeling back layers. I feel a little bit like a history detective. We're peeling back these layers and we really start to see how the house has evolved over time.
When you're dealing with color in terms of renovation and going back, what sorts of considerations are there for you?
The rose room in the house, the daughter's bedroom, is where one of the first rooms we would start interior restoration. So right now we've started doing some preliminary analysis of the paint. And the advances in color studies and paint analysis are really amazing right now because they can pinpoint a pretty specific range of years of when rooms were painted different colors. So the room that we call the Rose Room, we recently found out in doing a color study, that the room was originally painted mint green.
Oh my God. Mint green.
Yes. And so around 1880, it was painted mint green. And then eventually the color was changed in the 1890s to a beige. And then later, around 1905, the room was painted. They call it rose. To our eye, we might call it a salmon, something like that.
How do you decide which one to go with?
So that becomes the challenge, as to what time period do we restore the house to, the room to. The house was just in such a state of change always, and Jewel never thought it was complete. That's the real challenge, is pinpointing what year or what series of years we want to go back to.
So you can't just have a default. It's all going to be 1880.
Usually that's what a house museum does. Usually they have 1 year of interpretation, but Kerner's Folly is virtually impossible to do that.
Kerner's Folly, Executive Director Dale Pennington. You can lounge on the Kerner lawn, check out some awesome local arts and crafts, and take in a fascinating tour of Jewel Kerner's one-of-a-kind historic home during next weekend's Homegrown Arts and Crafts Festival. It's Saturday, July 19th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., and it's being hosted by the Kernersville Arts and Crafts Guild. So, fun for the whole family in lovely, lively Kernersville, North Carolina, just about 20 minutes from the Triad. In the meantime, you can enjoy self-guided tours year-round at Kerner's Folly, Thursday through Saturday from 10 to 4, and Sundays from 1 to 4. Guided tours are available by appointment, and you'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we're going to take a short break right now. When we return, fasten your seatbelts, we're off to Anatevka, a small, nondescript little town in Imperial Russia, but oh, the stories they tell, and the music you'll hear in Fiddler on the Roof. It's the Stained Glass Playhouse production, next, when Triad Arts Weekend continues.